Hey, Drew Scott here.
And I'm Jonathan Scott, reminding you that life's better with a home policy from American Family Insurance. They can help you get just the right protection at just the right price and help you save when you bundle home and auto. Kind of like Goldilocks and the Three Bears. It'll be just right for you. We love a custom build. American Family Insurance. Insure carefully. Dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
But
and somewhat boring.
I just spilled coffee, everyone. I'll go get some stuff. Clean that up.
Keep holding.
Hi everybody, today's episode is sponsored by Triangle Publishing. So before we get to the main event of this particular episode, I'd like to talk about a few exciting titles that are coming available from them in the near future or right now if you're a librarian. First, in the beloved Library Mouse series, celebrated writer and illustrator Daniel Kirk brings to life the joys of reading, writing, and sharing. In these interactive read-along adventures, young readers will hear dynamic audio while real-time word highlighting guides them through the text. Follow along with the adventure of Library Mouse Sam and his adventures in the library and beyond. Also, from celebrated creators Tom Engelberger and CeCe Bell, Inspector Flytrap is a clever, illustrated chapter book series about a mystery-solving Venus flytrap. With easy-to-read language and illustrations on almost every page, this early chapter book series is a must for beginning readers. And in these interactive read-along mysteries, readers will get the added benefit of hearing the dynamic audio while real-time word highlighting also guides them through these particular titles. These titles, and many, many more, are currently on sale at up to 50% off all April long in Overdrive Marketplace for all of our librarians who are listening in. Thank you so much for Triangle Publishing for sponsoring this episode. Hi, everybody, and welcome to episode 326 of the Professional Book Nerds podcast presented by Overdrive. This is Adam. I'm joined by Jill. How's it going?
You're back.
I'm back. And this is take two because
this is.
I threw coffee all over the place.
You did.
I was so excited to be back in the office that I couldn't contain the coffee next to me. Yeah, I was in jury duty. And as I was saying before, the stuff that I'm sure we'll cut out, I tweeted this as myself. It is both an important civic duty that you should do and wildly inconvenient.
Yeah, so. And also pretty boring.
Yeah, I obviously can't talk about the case or anything, but the annoying part for me was I was the first person selected to go up to a potential trial, which was fine. I was like, oh, I'll get to do the whole voir dire process and all that jazz. I walked in, and I recognized one of the attorneys as one of my good friends from college. So I was like, well, I'm obviously not going to be on this jury, which I ended up not being, but I still had to go through the three-day process of the, like, questions from the judge and the attorneys. And, like, the other attorney was like, you do understand, from my point of view, how I would not feel comfortable having you on the jury. I was like, yeah, 100%, totally get it. But they still kept me around for 3 days of talking.
See, I'm kind of jealous. I never even get that far. I just have to sit in the little stew room for three days.
Yeah, that is I literally was the first name called. And in Cuyahoga County, it's the city of Cleveland and also the surrounding places as well. So it's big. There's 34 judges. So when you go into the jury pool room, there's like, I don't know, like 300 people probably.
Yeah, it's a lot of people in that room.
And of those, I was the first one called for the first case.
That's hilarious.
Yeah.
No, I just had to sit and sit. I always kind of wanted just to at least get to that process of being a
voir dire.
Voir dire.
I was glad I didn't get
just because I like true crime stuff.
So yeah, I was glad I didn't get selected just because it's going to run into next week too. That's a long time to be out of the office. But yeah, I literally get when you and I were talking. And you're like, I don't know, I'm going to figure something out for the episode. And then you're like, I'm going to do true crime. I actually did giggle. I was like, that's very funny. At some point, I'm going to do courtroom dramas.
Yeah, I thought about it. I just didn't have enough time to find anything other than John Grisham.
Yeah.
But I know a lot of true crime, so it didn't require a lot of research on my part. It was a very busy week this week. So
yeah, I enjoyed it. So thank you.
You're welcome.
Pinch hitting. This episode, also speaking of you doing all the things this week, this episode's all you as well. So you want to tell people about it?
Correct. Yeah, this is the next interview from ALA Midwinter. I actually have a couple more coming because I did a lot of interviews at ALA
Midwinter.
So many. So this one is with Emily Duncan. She is a YA author of a book called Wicked Saints, which when it was pitched to me, it was described as like a gothic Russian Joan of Arc. And I was like, cool, mm-hmm. I'm in. Emily is also a librarian, which is kind of fun. And yeah, she was delightful to chat with. We talk about the book. She talks about how, you know, some of the blurbs for the book talked about if you are someone who likes falling in love with villains, I'm like, check. So, yeah, it's good stuff.
It's basically a book written for you.
Pretty much.
Like the BISAC code would be like, for people like Jill.
Yeah, yeah. So, so we chatted all about her book and research, how she sort of got into Russian literature and mythology surrounding that area, like Eastern Europe, and yeah, it's good stuff.
It's like a through line of both of our interests, it
yeah,
like.
In a lot of ways. So
because I haven't got, I'm excited to read it. This is one of the ones where I had nothing to do with the interview, but I'm going to read this book. Mm-hmm. It sounds really good.
It does.
If people want to get a hold of us, you can go to our website, professionalbooknerds.com. There you'll find links to our Twitter and Instagram, which is at ProBookNerds. You'll also find our email address, which is professionalbooknerds@overdrive.com. You'll find our Viber community. You'll find all the different places you can subscribe if you'd like. And you'll also find a link to Evergreen Podcast, which is the podcast channel that we belong to. Some really, really cool other amazing shows you can check out while you're there, like 7-Minute Stories and Riffs on Riffs, which I'm still trying to angle my way onto. So definitely check those out if you haven't. Is there anything else that people should know about?
Two things. Big Library Read is still going on. So if you haven't yet gotten homes from your library's Overdrive site, be sure to check it out. The discussion board is really active, which mm-hmm. is very cool. A lot of people seem to really, really be enjoying the book. So if you are one of our academic library friends and are coming to ACRL, welcome to Cleveland this week.
Hey, that's exciting.
That is exciting. Yeah, ACRL is being held in Cleveland this year. So, be sure to, you know, stop by. We won't be there, but you can stop by the Overdrive booth and still say hello to our colleagues who will be there.
I imagine they'll probably give you a tour if you'd like to come to see our office.
Yes.
I'm just guessing that. I'm putting that out there for the people who will be in the booth, but it just feels like if a partner is like, hi, can I see your office? I can't imagine them saying no. So.
Sure.
Speaking of traveling this week, if you're in Los Angeles this weekend, if you're listening to this on Monday or during the week, I will be at the Los Angeles Festival of Books promoting, instead of our school stuff, I'll be promoting Libby with our social media specialist, Ricky, who was on recently. So booth 706, if you want to come say hi there as well. So we're on both coasts this week.
There you go.
So, okay. Is that everything?
I think that's everything.
Cool. All right. Well, I hope you guys enjoy this episode all about Jill and Emily Duncan on the Professional Book Nerds Podcast.
Hi, everyone. This is Jill, and with me is Emily Duncan, a youth librarian and writer, and her debut book, Wicked Saints, is out in April. Stephanie Garber, author of Carval, said, if you've ever fallen in love with a villain, you will fall hard for this book, which is pretty much all I need to know.
Yeah.
That's a pretty solid...
I really love villains a lot.
That's okay. I do, too. So can you give our listeners a brief introduction to Wicked Saints?
It's being pitched as a gothic Joan of Arc.
Right.
I like to think of it more as fantasy Eastern Europe, Dungeons and Dragons-esque clerics, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Wherein the protagonist who talks to the gods has to team up with two just awful, terrible blood mage boys from the enemy kingdom to try to assassinate the king of the enemy kingdom and stop a holy war that has been raging for like a century. So it's weird. There's a lot of blood magic. There's just jokes. Like, it's ridiculous. But yeah.
So was the Joan of Arc thing yours or your publisher?
It was my agent. Okay. When we went out on submission, that was how she was pitching it. And like, it works really well, but it's funny because like never when I was writing it did that ever occur to me.
Well, sometimes you need somebody else to sort of find the
yeah.
The
hook there exactly. for you. Yeah. One of my favorite parts about reading your bio is how when you were in grad school and studying, you used your time mostly to find obscure Slavic texts. Yeah. Was that sort of, I guess, did the Slavic... Let me rephrase this question in a way that makes sense.
Yeah.
The book obviously takes a lot from that as inspiration. Did that come first, or did you have the book idea for, I guess, you know?
The book was a very slow build, because I got the idea when I was in college playing Skyrim.
Sure.
As one
no,
does.
No, I mean, that makes sense to me.
But it never worked. Like, okay. I would try to write the book, and nothing ever worked. And so I knew that I wanted to write fantasy Russia, because I'm very interested in Eastern Europe. And it was when I was in grad school, and I kind of just cleared out Kent State's, just every Eastern European folklore book they had was in my apartment. And that kind of led me to Polish folklore, which then I integrated that into the book, and then from there, I just did so much research, as much as you can do without being fluent in the languages, because
right.
I'm not. So I had to rely very heavily on translated texts and finding things that weren't super Western.
Okay.
Because a lot of times, especially, the problem with Russia research is that you get a lot with a Western lens, and you get a lot that's like Imperial Russia and like the Romanovs.
Right.
And I'm trying to write further back, medieval Russia, and it's a little more difficult. And with Poland, the thing that I kept having trouble with was there's not a whole lot of Polish, like, it's all World War II. Understandably
oh,
so.
Sure.
And so it was really hard to just find resources in English that were about Poland in this very specific time period that isn't like a history textbook.
Right.
Because those are dry, and I don't feel like I get much out of them when I use them for research. I wanted, like, folklore and culture
right.
and stories. Yeah.
What is it about folklore from that area of the world that is so interesting to you?
Everything is because of monsters.
Oh, well, that's fair.
In Russia, they have, you know, Russian folklore is fascinating because all of their stories center on generally someone normal, Ivan the Fool. Like, it's some normal person who has stumbled into this weirdness. And Polish folklore is very dark and obsessed with vampires. Like, anything that could go wrong, the reason is probably a vampire.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
And, like, they're similar. Like, they're both Slavic cultures, but they have such, like, extreme differences, all while being a little similar. Like, you'll get to stories and be like, oh, I read this, and it was vaguely similar, and it was the Russian version. So, like, you get the overlap, but also they are, like, very different, which I thought was super fascinating, because they have the same seeds,
right.
but they split off into very different.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
So, as you said, you like a villain.
I do. Do love a villain.
So how much fun was it to be like, I'm just going to write this book where it's, like, villain stuff and dark stuff and blood magic?
I really love this book. It was so much fun to write. It was so much fun to, like, because I wrote it after a book that I worked on for a really long time. I kind of had to come to terms with the fact that it wasn't going to go anywhere.
Yep.
So this was the book that I was like, well, whatever. I'm just going to write what I want to write, and either it's going to go somewhere or it's not, and I don't really care. And so it was this, because the character that is the villain,
quote unquote,
because he's part of the main cast,
right?
Like, that character, every time I was drafting, because I don't outline, so I would get to a certain part of the story, and the character would turn around and say something that would negate everything that I had just written, and I'd be like, well, I have to rethink all of this. And then I would get, like, four more chapters in, and he would do it again. And it just kept going down to the very end, where he does that to the entire book, and I finish a draft, and I have this just collection of very loosely connected garbage fires. And I'm like, well, I guess I can make a book out of this. But it was fun because, like, he's a mess, and he just does terrible things. And my one point of view character, Seraphin, is also a mess. And a lot of people don't quite know what to do with him at first, because I present him as if he's a villain in the first chapter, and then you get like one more chapter with Nadia, and then you switch to his point of view, which, and then people are like, well, I hate him, like, he's awful, he's the villain, and then I'm like, yeah, or is he just a mess?
Right.
Like, is he terrible, or is he tired?
It's a fine line there. It's a fine line.
Yeah.
No, I think that's okay, though, because I think we need more books where villains' point of view is shown. That's, you know, I think, one, for those of us who like villains and like that, but I think it's also important that, you know, the world and people aren't so binary. They aren't so good and evil.
Yeah. And especially, because I was crafting this book where both sides of this war, like, they both get points of view. So it became very obvious that it can't be about good and evil, because that's not how this works.
Right.
And it became very much more about, like, well, I mean, everybody's wrong.
Right.
But both sides are terrible and everybody's wrong. But it was fun to play with that, because it was, I spent less time thinking about the book in terms of heroes and villains, and more in terms of these characters from just vastly different worlds. Like, Nadia grew up in a monastery. She was deeply sheltered. She is incredibly religious. And then throw her in with Malakiash, who is heretic and as much of a militant atheist as you can get in a world where the gods are, like, kind of present.
Sure.
And these characters who just fight all the time. It's so much fun. They argue about everything, and it's so much fun.
I love listening to you pronounce the names, because I know there's a pronunciation guide out.
Yes.
Which I sort of love. That's actually probably very clever, because I imagine, you know, Russian names are already somewhat tricky, and then you add sort of the fantasy element of Russian names. And
it's the Polish names that are get people. Malakiash especially is the one that people are like, I get to his name and my brain just does this white noise thing, and I'm like, it's Malachi, but a Polish spelling.
Oh,
like,
see, that
that's
makes
the
sense.
Way to think about
that's,
it.
Wait, that makes sense.
Yeah.
So you said you don't outline.
I do not.
This is the first of a trilogy, though, correct?
Yes, it is.
Do you have any idea? Like, any?
So,
okay.
So, when I was querying this book for an agent, I was pitching it as a duology.
Okay.
I have two narrators. I have Nadia and Seraphin. So the first one's Nadia's book. The second one's Seraphin's book. On the call with my agent, she was like, but you have three main characters. You have Malakiash, too. And, like, I don't use this point of view for reasons. And
I wish people could see the look on your face when you said that.
He's just a mess. Like, we don't want to be in his head. He's my favorite. She's like, this would be better served as a trilogy, which I really wanted, because I want to write a book about Malakiash. He's the worst. Let's write a book about him. And it was one of those things that I never thought I would actually have. But it also meant that, like, I had planned for two. Like, I don't know what I'm doing. So when we went out on submission, I had to provide a very general synopsis of the arc of the entire trilogy. So I have a very, like, basic understanding, but also I'm finishing the second book. I'm in line edits, so, like, it's mostly done.
Right.
And I kind of broke the world. It's fine. And so I don't actually know. I don't know what the third book is going to look like, at all.
That's
okay. We're
going
to hope for the best.
There,
like,
you go.
I just find outlining, it's very restrictive for me. And frankly, Malakiash ruins everything anyway. So if I go in with a plan, I know he's going to burn it down. So there's no point. But that's just how I write, is my characters do their own thing, and I'm along for the ride,
right,
and to make it make sense in the end. Like,
that's
we'll
okay.
get there when we get there.
That's okay.
Yeah.
So you work as a youth and or as a teen librarian. I mean,
it's youth services, so we do the full.
Okay.
We do everything.
Do you think your experience working with sort of the teen age group helped in terms of what, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
what kind of books would are popular?
I would say no, because this book is more, like, I wrote it for it's the kind of book that I really wanted as a teen.
Okay.
I really didn't like books that were trying to teach me something.
Sure.
Never liked, like, messagey books. And I, because I liked villains, I was always frustrated with books that would, like, be really moral about that whole thing. Or, and I really liked, you know, villains as the love interest. And I was like, this is fun. But especially when I was a teen, anytime you got that, you would then get a moral lesson on why that's a bad thing. And it wasn't until Shadow and Bone by Leigh Bardugo came out. Love her. That kind of setup was presented, and the protagonist was never villainized for liking the villain.
Right.
And that was a game changer for me to realize that I can maybe actually go for this, like, kind of story that I really, really like and I really want to tell. But until then, it had been very, a lot of the books that I came across, like, if you want to do that, you need to have a lesson involved,
right,
too. And I'm not interested in telling lessons.
So you basically wrote a book for, like, teenage Emily.
Yeah, I did.
That's a good way to go about it, though, yeah. I think. You know.
Teen Emily would have really liked this book.
Yeah, I'm trying to think about it. I don't really remember. Yeah, there's not really that many books. And then, as you said, if you're sort of the character who falls in love or likes the villain,
it ends badly.
It ends badly.
Always ends badly.
That's really not cool.
No. Oh. It's so much fun.
Right?
So much fun.
So, we are, of course, at a library conference.
We are.
And, as I said, you are a librarian. So, I'm assuming you have some good memories of going to the library when you were a kid.
I do. I was also homeschooled, so, like, okay. I was always at the library. And I remember, like, because when I was a teen, it was before YA fiction was, like, really a thing.
Yeah.
So I read a lot of, like, Dragonlance and, like, adult fantasy. And you can tell that I read a lot of Dragonlance. Just my books show it. And I would just check out piles upon piles of books. And my mom would be like, you're never going to read all these. And then I would, because, I mean, you said that I wasn't going to, and now I have to.
Of course.
Out of spite. And I just, I was back to my hometown library a while ago, and they had renovated the whole, because there wasn't really a teen space. When I was, because there was never really,
right,
there was a few shelves of YA fiction, air quotes,
right,
yeah. And they had gutted the magazine section and made this, like, wonderful space for the teens. And it was just really good to see that, like, this library that I had grown up at that didn't really have that thing, just because that thing didn't exist yet, now has that space for them.
Yeah, it's, now that I'm thinking about it, the library that I grew up in, it was the same thing. There was one shelf, and I remember it being, like, a lot of Lurleen McDaniel. Like,
those, yes, kinds of, yes.
There was that. I think that was pretty much it.
You have,
and,
like,
Sweet Valley High.
You kind of have Tamara Pierce,
yeah,
for fantasy, and that was it. That was your fantasy. I read a lot of Redwall.
Okay. Sure.
I love monasteries.
There you go.
I don't usually go for the animals thing, but monastic mice, I was all for that. But yeah,
it was not really a thing.
Huh. We have Twilight to thank for all of that.
I mean, you're not right. That is true. I mean,
kicked and it all
I,
off.
And I read Twilight, and
I was the target audience for Twilight. I was all for it.
I actually hate quit the fourth book. I never finished
it. I didn't like it either.
I got so mad at one point.
The third book was my favorite, and I got to the fourth one, and I'm like, none of this is necessary. Why didn't we stop when the stopping was good?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you're right. That pretty much kicked off the whole YA trend.
Love those sparkly vampires.
See, I was a Jacob girl, so.
Didn't love those werewolves.
I did not like. See, my thing is that I grew up reading Anne Rice, so I'm like, vampires don't sparkle. What is this?
You know what? That's fair. Yeah, I've never read Anne Rice. That's a gap in my.
That might be a gap in your reading.
Yeah. We all have them somewhere. That's
so, for those listeners who maybe are one of those teen girls who likes villain books, or sort of those of us who did not grow up with him, aside from Leigh Bardugo and, of course, your own books, are there any others out there that you would maybe recommend?
Let me think.
I know, I put you on the spot.
Oh, man. Because there aren't very many.
Right.
So, Furyborn.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, my God.
So, yes, also written by a librarian, which I love, and she was on the podcast.
Her so much.
I know. I have an arc of Kingsbane, which I've not read yet, but I. Because it's so big, I'm like,
it's
so
big.
Time to dedicate to this book.
Yeah.
That is a good one.
That
as well.
Is a good one. It's funny, Claire was posting, like, snippets with the names redacted.
Yep.
And the only one that I liked was one with Corianne, and she messaged me, and she was like, Emily, of course. And I was like, my radar for villains is just amazing.
That's okay. That's okay.
Oh, Quill Prince, which is a little, like, less... Quill Prince has it all. You can if you ship Jude with different characters, you get every different kind of villain or hate to love or rivalmance. But I think that's a good one, just because that one is very like everybody's in it for themselves. So you get a lot of like twisty betrayals. And it's just so good.
I had not heard the term rivalmance before, but it makes perfect sense. Now.
I am very, like, I'm, like, very picky about those kinds of terms just because a lot of people will say hate to love when the characters never hated each other.
Right.
Or, like, enemies to lovers when, in fact, they were never enemies. You have to be on, like, opposite sides of a situation to be enemies.
But rivalmance is very succinct
rivalmance.
And explains exactly what it is.
Yeah.
I like it.
Let me... Oh, you know what? The Goodreads mobile is terrible and doesn't actually let you see...
Nah, I think we're good.
Furyborn is a good one.
It's a really good one.
Yeah.
Yeah. So at the end of all of our interviews, we do something called the Nerd 9, which is like a lightning round. Don't put too much thought. It's very... the last book you finished reading?
Winter of the Witch by Catherine Arden. I wept. It was perfect.
That's all you need to know. Favorite place to read?
I just read on my couch.
Book that made you fall in love with reading?
Oh, man.
I know.
Oh, that's a hard one.
I know.
Probably Redwall.
Okay.
Yeah.
One place you'd like to travel to that you haven't been to yet?
I want to go to Poland.
Favorite holiday?
Halloween.
I do. Coffee or tea?
Coffee.
Cats or dogs?
Cats.
Favorite food?
I don't have a favorite food, but I really love sushi.
Okay. And dinner with one... If you could have dinner with one person dead or alive, who would it be?
Oh, no!
I know. We're terrible.
Tolkien. Because he was such a nerd, and I am always... I'm perpetually fascinated by the language construction aspects of his books, and because I tried and I feel like mine are not that great.
And it's a full language.
It is,
I think,
a
that's the
functional
thing
language.
People don't always realize that it's a full functional
it
language.
It works. Yep. People have asked me about mine if it's like a functional language, and I'm like, it can't be, because then it's just Russian and Polish with different words. Like, I mean, kind of. I made it up. I made it up for when I needed it. Like, I didn't... He made it up, and then he wrote the book around the language. I made up the language for when I needed it in the book. So, yeah.
Yeah, good answer. Finally, what would you like readers to take away from Wicked Saints?
I love this question. Because... to question everything. And to not take... everything you're given, like, at first glance. And maybe dig a little deeper and think a little more about things, especially your own worldview. Because it might be a little different than what you actually think.
Thank you so much for coming on the podcast, Emily.
Thank you for having me.
Readers can sample and borrow the titles mentioned in today's episode from overdrive.com, and our library friends can purchase these titles in Marketplace. Professional Book Nerds is proud to be an Evergreen Podcast signature program. To learn about other Evergreen podcasts, visit evergreenpodcasts.com. Our podcast is produced, recorded, and edited by Adam Sokol and Jill Grunewald, and presented by Rakuten Overdrive. For more information, visit professionalbooknerds.com.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.